90 minutes into the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock with you. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Winnipeg Jets finished off a four-game homestand with Thursday night's victory over the Los Angeles Kings, as we all expected, right? You know, Jets taking care of business.
Yeah, exactly.
A successful homestand, well, at least the last three games, if you look at them, 5 out of a possible 6 points in the last three games. You start with that overtime defeat to the Anaheim Ducks last Sunday, the victory over the Utica Comets on Tuesday, and then Thursday night's victory against the Los Angeles Kings. You know, Tank Nation, of course, were disappointed to see the Jets pull off that win, but there was some good news on the out-of-town scoreboard in that case, in that that was also a night that the Oilers went into San Jose and beat the Sharks. So a lot of the teams the Jets were battling, I believe the Maple Leafs beat the Ducks that night. So a lot of the teams the Jets are battling for the final, for the best draft lottery odds, also succeeded on that Thursday night. You know, I want to talk about Blake Wheeler's comments earlier in the week about this being the worst year he's had. Here is, in case you missed it, here are the comments from Blake Wheeler. This is earlier this week, talking about the Jets season that has been.
It feels like the worst year of my career, yeah, to be honest with you. It's this has been, you know, I came into this year coming off that playoff run and just so excited. I think we all were, you know, still have, you know, it's still fresh in your memory kind of what you were doing this time last year. You know, I remember we were going to Minnesota, going to St. Louis back-to-back games we had to win and winning them both. And you can't replace that with having points or career years. You know, that's what it's all about. So that's where I'm at right now, trying to you know, figure out how to get back to that point.
Are those comments you like to hear? Are those comments that you're happy hearing from a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's probably going to be the next captain of this Winnipeg Jets? Do you like to hear the frustration and the disappointment and the, you know, sort of anger in his voice over how this year has gone for the Winnipeg Jets? You know, the last month, 6 weeks, pretty much been a complete and total write-off in terms of making a playoff run. Are you happy hearing those kind of comments from you know, the Winnipeg Jets leader?
If I'm a Jets fan, I'm happy hearing the comments because it shows you that he cares, and shows you that he's worried about the team game. And you could say talk is cheap, but Blake Wheeler's played as hard as any player has played, probably harder than any player has played since the Jets, all season, but certainly since the Jets have been eliminated as well. So I would be happy if I'm a fan, Jets fan, that he is angry with what's happened and is talking about the team.
I hear a but.
I would be worried, but I would be worried if I'm a Jets fan and how angry he is with where the team's at and frustrated with where they're with this season. I mean, this kind of goes back to Andrew Ladd's comment last year, I think it was, I don't care about draft and develop.
Sure.
Because you look at where Blake Wheeler stands right now and how good of a season he's had. He's got 3 seasons left on his contract. Mm-hmm. It's proven to be a great contract by Kevin Cheveldayoff, a 5.6 cap hit per year. But he wants to see this team going in a certain direction. Now, it's possible you hit it on the lottery, you get one of those top picks, you know, you luck out there, and you're turning it around quick. And I think that this turnaround we mentioned in the past couple shows isn't as far away as maybe some think. I think most people are overall encouraged. But Blake Wheeler, I think, is frustrated. In his comments there, is frustrated by the season as a whole, but also wondering where this is all going, I think. I kind of read that both ways.
You see Blake Wheeler as a guy who's soon to be 30 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
Who,
that's what I mean.
You know, like you said, he's got 3 years left on his deal. Doesn't necessarily want it to be 3 years until they're a playoff team again.
That's exactly right.
He wants them to be a contender back in the, you know, a playoff regular in the next couple of years. And he's frustrated in that he sees the team take a step forward last season, making the playoffs, and then taking 2 steps back this year with what has, you know, undoubtedly been a disappointing year in terms of the on-ice results. And he probably looks at the players around him and he says, yeah, they're talented, but when is that talent all going to come together? Mm-hmm. You know, are they all going to, am I still going to be here
right.
when that talent gels, or am I going to be, or am I going to be out the door by the time that talent all comes together and the next couple of years are going to just be sort of more building blocks to fully harnessing that talent?
I think his concern is in that as well. I mean, the guys always think, you know, okay, let's see here. What's my window?
Sure.
What's our team's window? And if it's not the window yet, am I going to be here for that? And so I'm not saying he's not going to be. So this team can turn it around, I think. But, you know, I think when he says it's a disappointing year in my career, I don't care about personal stats and all that stuff. There's encouraging parts of that for me, and then there's parts that would concern me a little bit.
Do you think go ahead.
I mean, he's likely going to be the captain, and that'll be that. Right? I mean, who else is going to be the captain on this team? I mean, there seems to be a lot, or there's been chatter about who's going to be captain. Who the heck else can be captain aside from Blake Wheeler?
That's why we really haven't had that conversation on the show.
Because, sure, let's talk.
Okay, I mean, there just doesn't seem to be. I mean, Mark Scheifele's not ready yet.
No, he's too young.
He's too young. I mean, you can't overlook Blake Wheeler. If it's not Blake Wheeler, then you might as well just, you know, then you're going to have to trade him.
The only way, I would, if it's not Blake Wheeler, then he's not here is what I would say.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's no issue. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien doesn't want to talk to the media. He's a huge voice in the dressing room, but he's a huge voice among the players. He's not going to be the public face of your team.
Right.
I mean, you know, if Wheeler's your captain, are you concerned that he's maybe a little too emotional?
Nah, I mean, sure, he can get too emotional at times, but that's not as I'm not concerned about it.
You probably bought a, I would suspect, not that they're making the decision based on what the fans want. I suspect fans will like that
because
they thought that Andrew Ladd may have been a little too serene. Now, I don't think for a second that's a fair criticism of Andrew Ladd, because I think he was as motivated and as intense behind the scenes as anybody else. He maybe just didn't express it with anger, you know, in post-game quotes all the time.
But who the heck, this is a discussion, but who's it going to be? I mean, the only other one I could see aside from Wheeler would be Little. That's it.
With Brian Little, and I think he's a great player and everything, but I think that he's in the process of being almost surpassed on the depth chart by Mark Scheifele.
He's a good player, Drew. He's a real solid player. I mean, he's going to, you know, he talks to the media. I mean, he's going to give you a lot of most guys will cookie cutter stuff, but I mean, I just see it as being Wheeler. Who else? And nobody, I mean, it's not going to be anybody on your back end. You mentioned Byfuglien. I don't think Tyler Myers is going to be the guy to be the captain here. Trouba is too young, and I'm not so sure he's going to be a captain anyways. Scheifele, sure, he has the makings of one, but you don't want to put in a Canadian market a guy that young, give him the pressure that comes along with it. So it's pretty cut and dry, and I think the only reason they're not naming Wheeler this year is because it's been such a write-off this season. They'd rather have it going into next year with a little more positive publicity.
And the players all know who it's going to be. I mean, it's not going to come as a surprise. It's not like there's, I mean, it's clearly Blake Wheeler's team. I mean, you can make the argument that to some extent it's been Blake Wheeler's team all season, even when Andrew Ladd was here, because Wheeler was the guy dominating on the score sheet. He was the guy, you know, who had the long-term contract. There was no uncertainty hanging over Blake Wheeler's head.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can certainly, I mean, the fact that it's even, I mean, like I said, there's a reason why we haven't had that kind of conversation on the show is because there is no other option as far as I can see.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, who else is it going to be?
Nobody. It's not going to be anybody else. So, I mean, Blake Wheeler is, and you can see him taking the leadership mantle as soon as Andrew Ladd, as soon as the Jets made the determination that Andrew Ladd was going to be traded.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Wheeler immediately filled that void. I mean, the cameras went straight to Blake Wheeler. The cameras, you know, he's the first person that people want to talk to after the game,
mm-hmm.
and that's a pretty clear sign that he's the guy who is the driving force in that locker room. He's the guy who's he's their best offensive player.
He is, and to his credit, he'll give you answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fans, you mentioned about the emotional, but I think the fans will appreciate that he'll answer the questions.
Well,
a lot of these guys don't answer. That's just the way it is. I mean, Mark Scheifele, another reason why I don't think he'd be a good captain in terms of dealing with the media is because his answers are so cliche that it's just like your head spins. And I know he's been taught from a young age, but I like Blake Wheeler actually will give you some answers.
Well, this is an organization that doesn't give very many answers from the general manager on down, so I'm not sure how thrilled they would be at the idea of having a captain who's emotional.
That's a change then. It's a different
tact.
Yeah, I mean,
a different approach.
I don't know but also to your point earlier, I'm not sure if you have if you have a real option here.
I don't think you do.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point in terms of Kevin Shevelyanov and Paul Maurice have certain ways of talking to the media. That is, well, Shevelyanov obviously talks, and you know, there's a lot of spin, and then Paul Maurice is. You know, Paul Maurice is funny, right? Because you know he talks two different ways. One behind, you'd assume to the, well, you'd not know, but you'd assume talks to the team in a different way than he talks to the media. You know, he comes on and says, I've been really impressed with Kuzmichuk and Patan and DeLeo. It's like, yeah, but it comes up. I can't say enough good things about them. Kuzmichuk, DeLeo go down to the minors, and Patan plays in the first line and goes down to the fourth line. Or not the third, well, the third line.
Sure.
But the idea is, he says things last year too about the players, and they all move in different situations. So there's certain aspects of what you get fed as part of the fans get fed and the media gets fed, and what the people are actually thinking. So I think Blake Wheeler would be a refreshing change to that.
Mm-hmm. Moving away from Wheeler, Tyler Myers, he's out for the year, obviously. I mean, Toby Enstrom's out as well. He had the knee surgery. Don't want to talk about that. The hip surgery. I mean, do you have concern about a player, especially when the size of Tyler Myers going under the knife for a hip-related problem?
It'll be fine, I'm sure. I don't know what Jamie Bennett had hip surgery, right?
He had pretty double good this hip year. Surgery.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're advanced enough. I wouldn't be...
There's no more Bo Jacksons who have degenerative hip conditions and things of that
nature. Well, I mean... Look how he played with the hip problem, Drew.
Yeah.
Did you even know there was a big problem there?
He hasn't missed a game as far as I know.
And Enstrom both looked pretty good before they got shut down. So
yeah.
I mean, I think this is something that would not be happening had the Jets been in a playoff race until after the season.
Sure. Despite what Paul Maurice may have said. I mean, they asked that, Maurice about Enstrom. He said, no, it got to the point where it was just, too hard to play with or whatever else. I mean,
and I'm not saying they're not injured, because they're injured, but I don't think they would be out if these games mattered at all.
No, that's very true. And so the Jets will start fresh, hopefully get both of them up and running for the start of next season. It'll be an interesting offseason, but I expect that at some point, sooner rather than later, Blake Wheeler, as you mentioned, will be named the captain of the team. Mark Scheifele will be, his running mate through there up at the center. Is it time for Scheifele to get an A on his jersey, though?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with him getting an A.
It'll be... interesting times for the Winnipeg Jets this offseason. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Paul Maurice's coaches summit that happened on this station and much more regarding your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock with you in studio. Still to come on the program, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News joins us next segment to talk about the Sabres, the Jets' opponent, later this afternoon. And then in the last hour, Dave Isaac joins us to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers, the resurgent Philadelphia Flyers, and the Jets' opponent Monday night in Philadelphia. Earlier this week, the coaches' summit between Hustler and Lawless and Paul Maurice occurred on this fine radio station. Here is a clip from Paul Maurice talking about the Jets' season that is soon coming to an end.
I don't have a great answer for you. I've got a bunch of factors. I want to be careful how I fire them out, because you don't want anybody thinking you're trying to make excuses, right? These are just factors. The first one I would say is it's possible. And I know that because of our opponent tomorrow night, the LA Kings of two Stanley Cups. All those lessons that we talk about after, they're learning how to win. I'm pretty sure these guys know how to win. And then they miss the playoffs the next year. So this is a challenge to do this. The teams that survive, like I think the fourth or fifth longest streak in the NHL of playoffs is St. Louis at four. So it's a pretty natural occurrence that teams rotate in and out of the playoffs, especially when you're young. And I think especially if you're going to play in the Central Division. I think we've got a bunch of things that are a little tougher for us here. I just didn't think that team last year, that curve of that team, was on the upswing. Because of the age of it and the age of the drivers, a lot of those guys had career years or close to career years. And I don't know that we thought that there were three more better career years after that. So then you've got to look at the core of the team and the shift and where are you going to be, where are your drivers coming from? And those are younger players. So we put four kids in our top, well, three, and then Alex Burmistrov, who hadn't played in the league. So a third of your forward group becomes young. puts more pressure on the older players to do more. I'm not sure that we can ask them to do more, especially when you look at least in pieces of their careers, a lot of those veteran guys are going to have career years. Blake Wheeler is in some ways. Brian Little was prorated to do that before he got hurt. Staff's probably hitting 20. And then, you know, the Shifleys of the world. And then we're going to have four forwards in our lineup. They're going to have career years because it's their first year in their league. So we're going to be closing in on eight or nine guys who've had career components to their years. Specifically, it's not that hard to figure out. Our defense wasn't good enough in terms of our team defense. Our goals against and our penalty kill were things that really, really hurt us. 5-on-5. And we'll take that block up until about 2 weeks ago. We've got a completely different team now. Our numbers are actually quite good in the league, and that's where we have hope. We're generating enough offense. We're not finishing enough. We need to be a much better team defensively. Our PK has started to run closer to the top 10 over the last 20 games in the NHL, which is why we're staying for stretches of time with Anaheims and the Chicagos and these teams. We've been able to stay fairly tight to them in those games.
That's Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice as part of the coaches summit. The part that, you know, that jumps out at me in that quote of his there is the thought that because the young players weren't on an upward trajectory, or because the players last season weren't as young, they needed to get younger, and that they thought that it wasn't sustainable based on the performance of the team last year. I have to believe that's a little bit of revisionist thinking. Because I don't believe that at the start of this year there was any talk that this team's expectations were anything other than being another year in the playoffs.
I think the first thing is, you know, you want to pick apart his comments a bit. He points to the fact that the Jets are missing the playoffs this year after making it last year, and that the Kings last year missed the playoffs after making it for many years, and that there's not many streaks in terms of long-term playoff runs. Okay. Fair enough, but I mean, you point to the Los Angeles Kings. Last year, the Los Angeles Kings' record was 40-27-15. They had a goal differential of plus 15. The Jets this year are 31-37-6, and their goal differential is minus 27. So I don't think you're comparing apples to apples there. In terms of your comment, Drew, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know why, if you think that group couldn't go any farther, okay. But then were you looking to have a rebuilding year? And if you were, and that was your plan, why didn't you trade Andrew Ladd in the summer?
Sure.
Why didn't you make other decisions in the summer?
It's the same team.
So, I mean, you filled different spots on the roster. You filled Frolik's spot, I guess, with, you know, Burmistrov, and you filled Slater's spot with Kopp and things like that. But you brought back the same defense, and you brought back the same netminders. Mm-hmm. And your players on the top end were the players on the top end that you had before. So, yeah, I agree. I think that is some revisionist history there. We're aware of the fact that this team is good on 5-on-5, and they do play long. You know, they carry the play for long periods of time. But to talk about the team being different recently and a whole different squad, and then also point to the fact that the penalty killing has been better, like,
You can't have it both ways. Yeah, I mean, we know the special teams have been abhorrent for this team for the majority of the season. I just can't get over the... I mean, my point is, with the exception of Andrew Ladd, who was traded, you know, 6 weeks ago, mm-hmm. less than 6 weeks ago, he was traded a month ago, it's fairly similar to the same team as last year's playoff team in terms of the real core players. I mean,
it's the depth, though, that they had the issue with, and we pointed to that at the beginning of the season, is if... Are you going to address that? And if you're not going to address that, you're going to have problems when you have injuries and you have guys like Peluso playing regular shifts and different things like that, and Thorburn playing in your top nine, all things that happen. So if you were going to rebuild, then you might as well have made other moves to get to assure that you were going to be a bottom squad if that was the plan, or you're going to load up and add some depth to the roster. I mean, one of the two, and you didn't do either, so you were kind of putting yourself between a rock and a hard place there.
If you thought that last year was the peak for the roster that you had.
It's just... This is what you said a couple weeks ago. Just be honest. Mm-hmm. That's all we had. And I don't know, they're worried about the fans in this market are smart enough to see through this stuff. They can see what, you know, what the Jets expected this year did not happen. This has been an unexpected. Maybe they didn't expect to make the playoffs. Maybe they hoped to make the playoffs but weren't sure they were going to make the playoffs, but they didn't expect to be this bad.
Right.
And let's just be honest. That's where things went, and you would just say, you would just hope that, you know, the coach says, and again, I realize managers and coaches in this world are so concerned about just telling the truth that they have to say it in such a way that, you know, kind of takes the heat off, not even them, like,
but makes it seem like this is part of the strategy, that this is part of the plan, as opposed to just saying, yeah, we're disappointed. I mean, everybody in that dressing room is disappointed. All the players are.
I mean, you've been out of it for 2 months, yeah, so month and a half, whatever it is.
There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, we thought we had a team that was good enough to, you know, we knew we were bringing in a youth movement to some extent. We thought that they were going to be good enough to work with our veteran players to still be competitive right till the end of the season. Turns out they weren't, so we had to go another way, you know, at the trade deadline by trading the captain.
Like what did you think maxed out last year, I guess is the question. Like, what maxed out?
Well, it's not like these guys were 34, 35, 30.
I'm just asking what maxed out. I mean, guys who left were Slater, Stepniak. I mean, they're depth players who are important, but Slater, Stepniak, Frolik. Yeah. Frolik was a big loss. The guys like that left, okay? But where was that massive drop? Okay, these guys are not going to... Is it the team as a whole? Okay, I can see what you mean, although the way you played over the last whatever many games of the season... I mean, many people picked the Jets to beat Anaheim last year, if you remember.
Sure. Well, the Jets were coming in. They were flying high. Yeah. They had the great stretch run to make it into the playoffs. Everything was hunky-dory. I mean,
I just say, just go out, and to me, you say, we didn't expect to be as bad as we've been. We're looking to change it. There are things that make us a rebound a lot easier. The fact that we're good 5-on-5, the fact that we have a good core of some skilled players, we should be able to turn it around relatively quickly because we didn't expect to be this bad this year. Because if you expect to be able to turn around relatively quickly, you probably didn't expect to be this bad this year.
Right. Well, yeah. That's just it. If they don't think that it's a huge rebuild, that they have to tear it down to the studs, because they didn't, because Wheeler and Bufflin and Little are still here.
Sure. For sure.
The only player you traded was Andrew Ladd. And I mean, you know, so you think that the core you still think is good enough.
Right.
Because you kept the core intact.
And you apparently tried to sign Andrew Ladd, so, I mean, you were pretty happy with that core, as you mentioned, Drew.
That's right. So, I mean, I just don't understand this revision. I mean, I understand. I guess I understand it. I just don't know why it always has to be that way. Just come out and say, you know, the season went off the rails. You know, our special teams weren't good enough.
It did. Well, special teams wasn't good enough. Yeah, those were those issues. Now, the problem with the coach saying that is that those are considered to be coachable problems.
He's got security. I mean,
he's got security. I've said on the show, I think the assistant coaches are going to be, one if not both, is going to be let go.
It's going to be changed. Yeah. That's fine.
And I mean Huddy and Vincent.
Yeah, I know.
Because I think, you know, they're not Maurice guys. I'm not saying they don't have a close relationship now. I'm just saying that he came when they were already here when he came in. And it's funny, you know, it's interesting, the perspectives. My initial thought to coaching was, well, you want to have the guys there that the coach is comfortable with, and not to say that the coach can't become comfortable with other people's guys.
Sure.
And they become his guys. But, you know, the other train of thought is the management should be hiring the assistant coaches because, and this was in Tom, we had Tom Lynn on last week, this was in his book, management should be hiring assistant coaches because if the coach starts coaching for himself, he's worried about his job, you don't want the assistants following suit, and you want them to be connected to the upstairs. I thought it was interesting.
Sure, the different approach. Do you want there to be sort of the two separate, not separate necessarily, but the two different wavelengths necessarily of thinking, as opposed to just one echo chamber of the head coach and the assistant coach?
Well, also, I mean, if the coach is on his way out, is he going to coach to win and play veterans more than young guys because he wants to win and he has a record as opposed to different things like that?
Well, and I think Paul Maurice is in some extent in an enviable position because he has a fair amount of job security, mm-hmm. even given this lousy season that the Jets have had.
But boy, that security doesn't last long. One more lousy season and the talks about him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fine. But I mean, to all of a sudden come out and make it seem like this was part of a plan because we knew we had to get younger because the core wasn't good enough. Well, it's the same core.
I mean, you look at it, Drew. Paul Maurice, I thought, did a top three coaching job last year. I thought he did a tremendous job.
Mm-hmm. Especially with all the injuries and everything else.
Yeah, he did a great job. Him, Peter Laviolette, we said he was a top Jet. To me, he was top three last year. He's done a poor job this year. He's not done a good job. The team has not been good in coachable aspects. The penalty issues that we spoke about early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Some line combinations, things like that. I think overall... He's had a poor year. You have to call it as it is. He has not done a good coaching job this year after last year. And I think maybe he lightened up a little bit on his guys after such a good season. I'm not sure, but I think that if we're going to give him the credit last year, and absolutely was due, I think we have to give him some blame this year. And he's done better coaching-wise before.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News to talk about the Jets' opponent this afternoon, the Buffalo Sabres. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Mike Harrington. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Winnipeg. It's the Sabres' 10th matinee of the season today. It's the last one. We've had a weird schedule getting used to all these afternoon games.
I was going to say, have most of them been at this bright and early 12 noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern there in Buffalo?
Seven times, Saturday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, yeah.
Wow, okay, well there you go. So it's not just a weird scheduling quirk, it's been a weird schedule for the Sabres all season long. Mike, we are talking, obviously we brought you on to talk about today's Jets-Sabres game. It's a meaningless game if you look at the standings. Both teams obviously aren't going to be playoff teams. You know, here in Winnipeg, it's definitely been a disappointing year coming off of last year where there was all the excitement about the playoff berth. In Buffalo last year, of course, it was all about Connor McDavid. They end up with Jack Eichel. You know, they're sitting there right now, the Sabres, 70 points, 30, 34, and 10. You know, from the fans' perspective, is it a disappointing year in Buffalo, or is this just sort of another year of a stepping stone, of a building block to getting the Sabres back into being regular playoff contenders?
You know, this was really the transition year, and I think in the first half of the season, people were disappointed. The Sabres hit 41 games. They only had 34 points. They were on pace for 68. That's not enough. They had 54 last year when they were essentially trying to lose. Mm-hmm. The second half has been much better. People feel much better what's going on here. They have an outside shot to finish with 80 points. They're probably going to finish in that 76 to 78 range, which is going to give them 23 to 25 points more than last year. And people see the improvement individually, and they have started to see the improvement here in the standings later in the season. So the second half has gone much better, and I really think people do think the transition year this year leads to a run to the playoffs next year, and this organization needs it now. You're talking no playoffs since 2011, no playoff series wins since 2007. They need to pick up the pace this summer, make a few more moves here, and really get into the race next season.
And, Mike, we want to get into specific players and then talk about the return of one Jet player. It was going to be two. Just want to ask you about, you know, a tweet you had on March 24th and about the organization. You tweeted out, another Sabres price increase and people on my feed, Twitter feed, are simmering. No giveaways, lousy game presentation, dirty seating bowl, team has to be better. Is there a lack of maybe favor in the community now at what's happening in Buffalo?
Well, actually, I'm going to be writing about this in my Inside the NHL column Sunday at BuffaloNews.com. There's a cheap plug. The season ticket price increase has brought a lot of consternation from people, more than I expected. They're happy with the product on the ice. They're not happy at all with the continued price increases. When Terry Pegula said back in the day he would just drill another oil well if he needed to make money, but that was before he knew what ownership in a club meant and how other owners are going to want him to take the revenue sharing pool. The team doesn't provide a lot, any giveaways. Season ticket holders don't feel there's a lot of benefits, a lot of respect being given to them. The game presentation is very poor, needs a tremendous overhaul here. And yes, the seating bowl issue, you know, has really percolated this year. The media, of course, sits in the 100 level, the lower level, for practices, for morning skates, and I do it in arenas all around the league. I have no idea what's going on in First Niagara Center. It's a pigsty when we sit down there and we see it, and the fans are complaining during the games. The place is not kept very well. The concourse is beautiful. The arena atrium is beautiful. I have no idea what's going on in the seating bowl. It is not like that in other cities, and people on my Twitter feed have flooded it this week with complaints about that area.
Mike Harrington joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Now, Mike, obviously, you know, the return of Drew Stafford to Buffalo, and we'll talk about that. I want to start, though, with the goaltending situation in Buffalo. Before the year started, they bring in Robin Leonard from the Ottawa Senators, and he's had an injury-plagued year, but when he's been healthy, he's put up some pretty decent numbers, a 924 save percentage, a 2.47 goals against average. You know, are the Sabres still banking on Robin Leonard to be the goaltender of their future going forward, or is the injury concerns making them have second thoughts if they can rely on him on a night-in, night-out basis?
No, they have no choice but to bank on Leonard as their goalie of the future. They gave up a first-round draft pick for him. So they have no choice. He has to be their guy. Now, the problem is, like you said, he only managed to play 21 games this year, and they're supposed to make an announcement today, probably after the game, about what Leonard's status is for the rest of the season. His ankle started barking again last week. I'm wondering if after the game today they're going to tell us he's getting shut down for the season. Chad Johnson's won 18 games for them. No one could have expected that, but I think he's going to be looking for a two-year deal as a starter somewhere. I think Calgary, his home, might be a great target. So they may not have Chad Johnson back. They're going to have Leonard show that he can be a 50-55 game goalie, and he certainly hasn't done that in the past with Ottawa and was unable to do that this year. But they're all in Robin Leonard. You give up a first-round draft pick for a goalie, you have no choice. So they really need Leonard to be the guy next year. Linus Ullmark, their prospect in Rochester, did a pretty nice job here for 19 games, still needs some work. But Leonard played well enough to be the number one goalie going forward. The biggest question here really isn't can he play well enough. The biggest question is can he simply stay healthy.
Mike, Zach Bogosian's been logging big minutes for the Sabres for a little while here, and he's been putting up some points as well. Can you talk about how he's progressed here for Buffalo over the past, say, 2 months?
Well, he's one of these guys. You talked earlier about the first half versus the second half. His first half was not very good, and a lot of that, I think, was outgrowth of the injury. He missed, I think it was the first 17 games. Mm-hmm. He had a lower body injury coming out of training camp. And I just don't think he had the explosiveness and the confidence in his legs that he needed the first half of the season. He's been a different player here the last 20, 25 games, a guy who, you know, you certainly feel you can move forward with as one of your top four. Very aggressive in the offensive zone, very aggressive defending his teammates, physical. It's exactly what they needed when they traded Tyler Myers to get Bogosian, because for quite a while, Tyler Myers was giving the Jets much more than Bogosian was giving Buffalo, but mm-hmm. I think they have to be very happy with the last 25 games or so they've gotten from Bogosian. And kind of like Leonard, they need to see that on a full season basis, but he's been really good here in the second half.
You got to ask, the follow-up to the Zach Bogosian question is obviously has to do with our friend and yours, Evander Kane. 20 goals on the season for Evander, for the natural. He has reached that you know, milestone, that mark that, you know, most players look for. How has Evander Kane been, you know, in the particularly the second half of the season, as you mentioned, you know, now that he's had the legal issue maybe hanging over his head, which was proven to be not an issue at all at the end of the day?
Yeah, he's got 20 goals. He missed 10 games early in the season with a knee injury. Easily could be in that 30 range. He gets a tremendous, I don't need to tell you guys, he gets a tremendous mm-hmm. number of scoring opportunities. Yeah, he needs to work on his finish. You know, sometimes in basketball parlance, you know, he'll just throw some shots at the net from long range without a lot of chance of them going in.
Mm-hmm.
He needs a little more finish down low. There's been some nice setups from Jack Eichel. He has not finished. But you know, he's given them a dimension they didn't have, guys. He's that kind of power forward who can work down low and cycle the puck, and they have not had that. And the one thing I didn't like about Dan Bylsma recently was when Kane was on the line with Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, they were really going. And when Ryan O'Reilly came back from injury, they put Kane back with O'Reilly, and Eichel and Reinhart haven't been as good in recent games without Kane. I would like to see them reunited. As far as the off-the-ice stuff, yeah, the NBA All-Star Game situation where he missed practice wasn't good, and the legal situation wasn't good. But, you know, the legal situation amounted to nothing. And, you know, no one was there except Kane and whoever else. But that's my comment on that, was he wasn't charged with anything. So, you know, they have to move on from that. He needs to, you know, keep himself out of those situations. He's been really good with the media this year. He's, you know, there's never been any issue with Evander Kane on the ice at all, and that certainly is the case here. They're very happy with the pickup in that regard, and We'll have to see. He wanted to be a 30 to 35 goal guy. He's had enough chances this year to do that. So we'll have to see next year if he can get there.
Mike, Tyler Myers obviously now not being in the lineup for today's game. Is that a disappointment for Sabres fans, or do they really not care either way?
I don't think they care. I mean, the trade now was 13 months ago. There are a lot of people that like Myers. I'm one of them. I think the Sabres have missed Myers' dimension this year a lot, and people said, well, he wasn't very good. And, you know, the issue, Tyler Myers didn't have Ryan O'Reilly, Jack Eichel, and mm-hmm. Sam Reinhart sure. to pass the puck to when he was here. So, of course, he wasn't going to look very good in the last couple of years. I think he would have looked much better on this team. But they made the deal, and you have to make a deal to get a guy like Bogosian and get a guy like Vander Kane. And, you know, people, I think Myers was a lightning rod for criticism here during some really bad times. And I think, you know, he also never really lived up to the offensive capability he showed in his Calder Trophy season. But I think they miss him, and I think he's had some nice run in Winnipeg. But I understand, and I know from just watching some Jets games, it's just hasn't been the kind of season you guys expected. I mean, Calgary and Winnipeg are kind of in the same boat. You make mm-hmm. the playoffs one year, you don't expect to be, you know, down trying to escape 30th place the next year.
That's very true. Mike Harrington, our guest. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, Sam Reinhart, he's into his second season here with the Buffalo Sabres. He's reached the 20-goal mark. You know, are we just seeing him scratch the potential that made him that second overall pick back in 2014? The future is very bright for this young man.
Yeah, I mean, Eichel obviously has 22 goals and 27 assists, and that's pretty much where you could have pegged him his first year. Reinhart, remember, played 9 games last year, didn't get a goal, mm-hmm. was sent back to junior. I mean, he was not NHL ready. And we saw at the World Junior Championships the kind of player he can be. He was pretty much most of that tournament better than Connor McDavid. McDavid was coming off his injury at the time. Reinhart came into camp this year much better physically, more mature physically, ready for the NHL game, and I think has exceeded expectations. You would not have gotten me to tell you 20 goals and 37 points from Sam Reinhart this year, and that's been a huge boost for the Sabres. You're looking at two rookies in Eichel and Reinhart with 20 goals. The Sabres have not had that since 1974-75 when Danny Guerin and Peter McNabb did it on the team that went to the Stanley Cup final. So that's a huge boost for the Sabres going forward, and you're right. These two guys are going to just get better. I mean, this is scratch the surface kind. No one expects Eichel only to be a 55-point guy, which is probably what he's going to be around this year. These guys are going to score a lot of goals and put up a lot of points here and, you know, be the linchpins of this club going forward for a long time.
Mike, Drew Stafford played a long time in Buffalo. He was interviewed on the pregame show before Thursday's game, or is it after Thursday's game? Either way, talking about returning to Buffalo, and, you know, he kind of gave your regular hockey player answer, be good to see some friends, but then we got to get down to business. You know, he played there a long time in Buffalo. I know he wasn't a superstar by any means, but how is his tenure in Buffalo thought of by you and by the fans?
Yeah, he was over 560 games, I think was mm-hmm. the number. You know, Drew, we saw Drew mature here. I mean, he was a kid who came in and he matured and, you know, left as a married guy, and he really started focusing more on hockey. He was criticized early as a young player for being more into music, and he really turned into a hockey player. And I think, you know, there was a lot of trouble with the fans. He became kind of a punching bag and a symbol for some of the failures of the franchise. You know, he was part of the core. It just didn't win very much after 2011. And he had one 31-goal season, which essentially got him a 4-year, $16 million mm-hmm. deal, and he never played up to that contract here. You know, he's a former number one pick. You know, he loved the organization. He loved playing here. He was committed to playing here. He knew he was getting traded last year. No one knew Winnipeg at the time, but he knew he was going in a deadline. The trade ended up coming a little earlier before the deadline. So he's just kind of a guy who won't generate a lot of emotion either way with his return today. I don't think it really registers on too many people's radars. He had a nice career, but it was definitely time for him to go. And, you know, he's had a nice little run here with Winnipeg. I mean, he got a new deal. He made the playoffs once, but just kind of is what he is as a player.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. And, you know, Richard asked you earlier about Zach Bogosian and his impressive play this season. Rasmus Ristolainen, he's gotten 39 points so far this year, a former first-round pick a few years back. Is he one of the better young defensemen in the league that pretty much nobody's talking about?
Yeah, I think he's a little underrated on the scope of the national radar here. Here's a guy who, you know, is going to be in the World Cup for Finland, plays monster minutes. I mean, his plus-minus is minus 19. It's deceiving. He's been on the ice for a lot of empty net goals. He plays against everyone's top lines. 21 years old. He's got 39 points. He's got a lot of snarl to his game. He's their number one defenseman, and this is where they need to show improvement. They have a lot of their core people in place. They have Reinhardt, Eichel, O'Reilly, Evander Kane, Ristolainen, and Robin Lehner. So they need to improve next year quite a bit and get some more parts in here. But they have the number one defenseman that all good teams need, and it's Rasmus Ristolainen. And that's a guy going forward. They're going to have to sign him this year, probably long-term. The Olli Maatta deal in Pittsburgh, I think, really sets a bar for Rasmus Ristolainen, and they're going to deal with him in the offseason. But, you know, he's going to get paid. He's their guy.
Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, now if we're there at the end of June, as we expect to be for the draft, are you hosting a barbecue or anything? What can we bring? Potato salad?
let's not get a little ahead of ourselves here. All I can say about people coming to the draft is they'll have a great time. It's not the middle of winter. They'll be able to walk and jog around the marina, walk on Elmwood Avenue in Delaware, and partake in some of the great restaurants maybe they're not able to get to in the middle of winter. People are going to have a great time here in June. They'll be very happy to be here.
Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, appreciate your time this morning.
All right, gentlemen, take care.
Take care, Mike. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to have our conversation about rethinking the NHL's playoff format. Big thanks to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News for joining us. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Still to come in about 8 minutes' time, Dave Isaac joins us. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Kyle Bottom. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. And if you've been waiting, you've been, you know, delaying to get your Marlon Wayans tickets, he comes next month. He comes in about 3 weeks' time. There's only one show available Thursday night. Every other show is sold out. So if you don't yet have your Marlon Wayans tickets, jump on that real quick at RumorsComedyClub.com. Richie, we've been previewing this for much of the show, talking about rethinking the playoff format. And it's something we've discussed on the show before. And I endorse the idea, I believe, from Eric DeHatchick that says if you finish first overall, you should get to name your opponent in the first round. What were your thoughts about the, you know, you said, you know, coming into the show, you had some ideas about rethinking the NHL's playoff format. What was on your top of mind?
Gave it some thought, and I've been against certain things before, and I probably bent a little bit. And this is what I think is probably the best right now, Drew. I think the problem you have when you look at the standings is that there's no incentive. There's not enough incentive for matchups and finishing first.
Sure.
Right? Like, it could be LA's finishes first and they play Chicago, where they'd rather finish second and play San Jose. You know, to see what I mean?
Certainly.
So I think, and look at Washington with nothing to play for here.
Yeah.
So and we'll talk about the lottery proposal in the last segment. But what I think makes the most sense is this, and it does involve adding a team for a playoff game, which I don't like because I think you already have more than half the leagues getting into the playoffs. And my God, with expansion, who knows what they'll do? But
every team makes the playoffs.
But this is what I think. I think that you, and we've talked about it before, but I think this is what I would propose. You have a play-in game between the 8 and 9 teams. So you create an incentive of the wild card, meaning there's two wild card spots right now. The first wild card team
gets a full 7-game series.
Well, no, the first wild card team. Sorry, you're gonna add 2 play-in games.
Sure.
Okay. So you're gonna add technically have 20 teams making the playoffs, but really, I mean, is that playoffs? It depends on how you view it. Okay.
Major League Baseball style.
Yes, exactly. So the first wild card team is going to play the fourth wild card team.
So that would be Nashville right now would play the Arizona Coyotes.
Exactly. And that would be a 1-game play-in game.
Okay.
And the second wildcard team would play the third wildcard team. So that would be Minnesota
Colorado.
And Colorado. Okay? So that would be a 1-game play-in game. That game would be held on Tuesday night after the season starts. So okay. doubleheader, you do 6 ends. And 8:30, yep. doubleheaders, okay?
Okay.
Tuesday night after the playoffs start, the winner...
After the regular season ends.
Sorry, the regular season ends. Yep. The winner
yep.
has to then travel to the first place team, whenever the rankings are,
sure.
first place team, and play on Wednesday night.
So that there is a...
So you're playing road back-to-back to start the playoffs. You get that. That is your penalty. You have to win on the Wednesday, on the Tuesday, but then you have to travel after the game to wherever you're going, LA and say Dallas,
sure.
and you have to play Wednesday night and start your regular every other night schedule. So the first place team gets the benefit of playing a tired team to start off with, and they get home ice advantage.
There's nothing I dislike about that. Now, I assume that the home teams for those play-in games
yeah.
would be the teams that finish first and second
Correct.
In the wild card standings.
Correct. Yeah.
So those teams, here's the downside from those teams' perspective. Right now, if there's none, that play-in game doesn't exist, they're guaranteed two home playoff dates.
Mm-hmm.
If they incorporate that idea, they're only guaranteed one home playoff date. For the possibility that they would lose that one game play-in game series.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I like it from the top three perspective. The division, the top three in each division, that there actually is a reward for playing well out to the end, that you get to avoid that one game, anything can happen, wild card game. I think general managers will like it because they'll be able to say, we were a playoff team. Even though they're in the one game playoff, mm-hmm. I just think right now I agree with you from your point at the beginning of the segment. Right now the playoff format is stagnant. There it just isn't the incentive to really do well all the way to play hard and do well all the way through game 82. And if you're the Chicago Blackhawks right now, I mean, do you think Chicago really cares if they finish third in their division or if they finish first in the wild card spot? Maybe they do to avoid the Los Angeles Kings.
Right, but it's from the Kings' perspective that would bother me. You're finishing first, and you're not playing you're playing a team that's played the exact same amount of games as you.
Sure.
So you have one extra home game.
Yeah, it's not enough of an incentive,
no.
is what you're saying. Whereas the Kings would quite happily right now to avoid, if it ends up being Chicago, to avoid Chicago, lose the next couple games at the end of the year, let Anaheim pass them, and let Anaheim play Chicago in the first round.
The other solution to me, I think, is untenable because the owners would never agree, would be to give the first place team a 5 out of 7 home ice advantage.
Sure.
That's not going to happen.
It's certainly not going to happen. But, I do think that over an 82-game season, what is the Washington Capitals, who've been far and away the best team in the league, don't get enough of a reward for being that best team. I mean, a President's Trophy banner isn't that exciting.
So if you play a team that's tired the first night, it gives you an advantage.
Sure.
You get off to a good start.
Yeah.
Less likely to have an upset.
Well, if the season...
Gives more money, puts more money in everybody's pocket, gives more fake playoff chances to all these teams. And, I don't like the idea of adding more teams, but I think you have to reward success more than average play.
Well, baseball's been successful with that idea because people love the idea of a one-game playoff.
Right, and that's another thing that you get. Now, granted, baseball is less teams making the playoffs, true, but
sure.
yeah, but yes, exactly. So you get that aspect of it. Now you do. So you'd have four. You had four of these play-in games,
mm-hmm.
and you do it, say, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so then the Wednesday you could have Western Conference starting with Eastern Conference play-in games, and then just make sure you have back-to-back. You do it that way, and maybe it makes sense to do that if there is expansion, not having more teams play in the playoffs.
And play in the 7-game series of the playoffs,
yes.
you're saying. Don't
yes.
add another layer to,
yes.
to that because they'd be playing playoffs until September at this point in time.
And if you finish 7th and 8th, you don't deserve to have a guarantee of more than one playoff playoff game period. You have to...
Well, it gives you incentive to be one of the top 6 teams.
And it makes it hard for you to make a run because you're starting off tired and you're playing a really good team. And if you're able to get through them, you're likely going to be tired. Plus, you started off a lot of travel and things like that.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to come to fruition.
Putting it out there.
But because the NHL never thinks outside the box. But I like where your head's at. I like that you're thinking when the NHL tall foreheads themselves aren't. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Dave Isaac to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. A Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Dave Isaac. Dave covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Courier Post. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure always, Dave. The Jets and the Flyers, of course, Monday evening in Philadelphia. For the longest time this year, it looked like the Flyers were not going to be playoff bound. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, 7-1-2 in their last 10 games. The last month for the Flyers has been absolutely tremendous. And if the playoffs were to begin today, albeit they're tied with the Red Wings, but with that game in hand, they would be a playoff team. Where has this Flyers impressive streak of hockey come from?
I think at least part of it has to do with Dave Hakstol being in his first year as a head coach and having his system needing to be so detail-oriented that the Flyers finally kind of, I don't know if perfected is the right word, but absorbed it to the point where it's running the way that Dave Hakstol wants it to. I remember asking them in October, November, how's it going with this new system? And they would say, well, we're getting it. It's coming along. Yeah, maybe that was part of some of the losses earlier in the year. Well, now it's all four lines operating that system at kind of the same rate. So I think that has something to do with it.
Davey, I look at this team from afar, and I've admittedly not seen the Flyers play much this season. But I look at this team, I look at the defense, and I realize, you know, Shane Gostisbehere has put up some incredible numbers. But as a unit, this six-man group, to me, does not inspire confidence. How has this team been able to perform so well with a defense that, at least to me, seems so average?
Well, I agree. This defense is really nothing to write home about, especially when you look at them now without Michael Delzato in the lineup, because mm-hmm. they'd kind of polished him to be a number one type guy in terms of minutes and in terms of responsibility. He was a player that used to be very much an offensive-minded defenseman, and they kind of turned him into sort of a shutdown guy. So losing him was huge for them and makes mediocrity on paper look even worse. But I think the way that Hakstol's system is kept that in mind at the beginning of the year, where forwards have to come back and help out big time in the defensive zone, and they have a couple guys who can move the puck and aren't the best defensively. Gostisbehere is one of them, although he's improved defensively. Andrew McDonald's a guy who gets a lot of flack in the city. He can move the puck a little bit, just not in his own zone. So I think it's been a little bit of everybody helping one another to make all that work. Because I agree, you look at this Flyers roster and you say, how is this team doing this? Because if one thing comes out of place here, you just kind of expect everything to unravel.
Dave Isaac is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Courier Post. Dave, you look at Braden Schenn, and Braden Schenn's in the midst of a career year, having set career highs in points already, still with another 10 games or so to go on the season, a little less than 10 games. You know, is he taking his game to another level, or is this just, you know, Braden Schenn maybe, you know, another year under his belt, developing even more as a player as he gets to be, you know, 24, 25 years of age?
Yeah, we've seen this from Schenn in spurts. The biggest difference this year is the consistency level. And I don't know the science behind contract years, but he's an RFA who's looking at getting a new contract this year, this summer rather. So I'm not sure exactly what that means for the numbers that he will get on that new contract, but he's certainly figured out the consistency part. He started out this training camp on the fifth line, not even in Hakstol's plans, and is now the top line left wing and has been there for the last several months. So I think that's been the biggest thing with Schenn. A lot of people point to the fact that his brother got traded, and for some reason that had an effect on his game. I don't buy that at all. I think that he's just kind of progressively figured it out. And I think when you keep a player on the top line for as long as he has, that kind of instills confidence also. So I think that has something to do with it.
Dave, what did you make of the Michael Raffl extension?
I think that made sense. He's a player that can offer some things that maybe they weren't expecting when they first signed him over from Europe. He's got the speed, but he's also shown a certain level of grit that I'm not sure the Flyers expected of him. And for that reason, I think the contract made sense. It doesn't break the bank, certainly. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that can move kind of anywhere in the lineup. He has been the left wing in the top line in the past for a little bit. I think that's why his numbers were so high last year. He spent the majority of the year in that position. But you know what? It was a two-year deal where it just kind of made sense. The Flyers don't have anybody coming up next year that could fill a role like that immediately. So, you know what, 2 years is makes a whole lot of sense. By the time that contract expires, maybe the Flyers do have somebody that can come up and fill that role.
Dave Isaac, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Courier-Post. Dave, Claude Giroux, he's leading the Flyers in points. No surprise there, necessarily. Yet again, a Team Canada announcement has come and gone, and yet again, Claude Giroux was left off of Team Canada, this for the World Cup of Hockey, of course. Do you sense that he's playing with a chip on his shoulder since that announcement was made, or is he sort of just unfazed at this point by the number of snubs that Team Canada has unleashed upon him?
Yeah, I think he's a little unfazed at this point, and I think part of it also is that when those rosters were announced at the beginning of this month, they can only announce 16 players. Like, I would be shocked if he wasn't on the final roster come June. I just don't get it. When you look at all the intangibles that he brings, you wonder if the scouts for Team Canada see that, because I figure that they must have, because Craig Berube has been one of those scouts that has watched a lot of Flyers hockey this year, and he was the former Flyers coach last year, so he knows darn well the intangibles that Claude Giroux can bring. But you wonder if everybody else sees it too, because of it's not just the points. You know, you'd be surprised if you knew that quietly he's kind of led the NHL in points over the last whatever it is, five seasons, I think. Crosby may have caught up to him recently, but he had like a 14-point lead over Crosby for the last five seasons. You just wonder, do people understand the other things that he does without the puck? So, yeah, I think to have a long answer to your question here, he's kind of unfazed by it. Last year was a little bit different with the Olympic snub, and, you know, he did have a chip on his shoulder. I think you can kind of tell when Claude Giroux's upset about something, and he was upset about that. This time around, I think he said, you know what, ask me again when it's June, and the final roster's been put out. So I think this is just him kind of getting pissed off about not making the playoffs last year and taking his game to a new level for that.
Dave, how surprised are you that this run of great play and results coincided for a large portion of time with Jakub Voracek's injury?
Yeah, well, the Flyers have dealt with that a couple of times. Voracek was hurt, Claude Giroux was hurt, Sean Couturier was hurt. Couturier was probably the injury where the Flyers felt it the most, I think. He's a guy that, as the number two center, hasn't always provided the offense. He's taken a step forward in that regard this year. But the defensive side, I mean, they plugged everybody else in there, and it just wasn't the same. With Giroux out, it was a short thing. It was 3-4 games. Voracek, somehow they survived. That was the first game of a six-game homestand, and Voracek said the morning of the first game, well, if this team gets 10 points out of a possible 12, then we can stay alive in the playoff race. The Flyers did exactly that, and five of those games were without him.
We should ask you about the production of Ryan White. Dave, he's from Brandon, although Brandon's now down 2-0 in the first round against the Edmonton Oil Kings.
Yeah.
So why don't we hit Brandon up for two questions here. Ryan White's four goals, in the last six, seven games, and then Ivan Provorov being named Defenseman of the Year in the WHL.
Yeah, to take the first one first, Ryan White, he showed a little bit more of an offensive punch last year also than he did when he was with the Montreal Canadiens. So I think that may be a little bit of progression also, but this year he's also got three power play goals. The Flyers used him last year when Wayne Simmonds got hurt at the very end of the season, basically just because he was a right-handed shot, to plant him in front of the net and see what happens. And I don't believe he got any goals, but he certainly caused some havoc there. And, Dave Haxtell wasn't around for that, but either he was told or he looked back at tape or saw what he was doing this year and said, that's not such a bad idea. put him on the second power play unit and try again, and that's worked really well. The second power play unit for the Flyers has actually been carrying the load in the man advantage here, and White's been a part of it. The one goal that he got the other night happened to be an empty netter, but he's done a lot of good things for this team when there is a goalie in the net. So that's been a welcome surprise for the Flyers. And as for Ivan Provorov, I would be shocked if he was not on this Flyers roster next year. Just shocked. I mean, you see everything that he's done this year, everything they did in the World Junior Tournament, scoring that goal, or I guess getting the primary assist because the shot from the point was tipped with the waning seconds of that game there. He's got all the tools. Everybody that I talk to that's seen him at that level says, you know what, he can absolutely play in the NHL right now. Obviously, Ron Hextall wants to play it patient, play it safe, take time. But I don't think he's going to be able to deny Ivan Provorov a spot on an NHL roster next year.
Dave, we'll let you go on this final question. And sort of an under-the-radar injury was the one that happened to Michael Nuvarth earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. He's going to be out for the remainder of the regular season. He's had a great year with a .925 save percentage and a 2.28 goals against average. The real problem from the Flyers' perspective is you look at the end of their year and they finish with three back-to-backs. The second and the third with Ottawa and Pittsburgh, the sixth and the seventh with Detroit and Toronto, and then the ninth and the tenth with Pittsburgh and the Islanders. Is it going to be Steve Mason from here on out, or are the Flyers going to take a chance and throw Anthony Stollers, their former second-round pick, in net for some of those back-to-back contests?
I would be really surprised if they threw Stollers in net there. There's only three ways that I would get Anthony Stollers in a game. Either the Flyers are mathematically eliminated, they clinch a playoff spot, or one of Steve Mason's legs becomes detached from his body. There's no other reason why I would put Anthony Stolarz in a game. A guy to make his NHL debut in a playoff run makes no sense to me.
Dave Isaac covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Courier Post. Dave, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks again for having me, guys.
Take care, Dave. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One final segment for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I guess the beauty of a 6 a.m. show is that you have your full day still ahead of you. So, you know, we'll be done here at 9 o'clock, have the full day ahead, little puck, coming up for us. We're going to play a little bit of, see if we can skate a little bit over at the old River Heights barn, right?
It's going to be fun, Drew.
I'm looking forward to it.
I don't mind these, I don't mind these early shows either, Yeah. You were complaining all morning about
it. Oh, I was not. That's absolutely not true. You know very well that I'm up at this hour on a regular basis, thanks to the little one. You know, so it's just the par for the course is what it is.
Is that Ezzy over there?
Yeah, no, Ezzy just showed up. Yeah, no, Ezzy's, of course, away from the program today. So those of you thinking that he's slept in and showed up 2 hours and 50 minutes late, no, he has had permission from us to not be here today. Does he actually have to ask permission?
Yeah, I don't think he needs to ask permission.
No? Okay. Well, anyways, for you Kyle Connor fans, who are certainly a lot of people in this city watching Kyle Connor, tracking his every move. Last night, Michigan victorious in their opening round game against Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken. Last night they played Notre Dame, I think, and they will be next in action tonight against North Dakota.
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock Central Time, a game you can see on TSN2. So Kyle Connor going up against North Dakota, the winner heads to the Frozen Four starting next weekend.
Yeah, I haven't seen Michigan play. I've seen North Dakota play. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
So if Michigan is as good, obviously, as advertised, and this should be a heck of a game.
Yeah, so something you can look forward to. TSN2 has that broadcast at 5 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. So, Richie, last week on the program, we were talking about the NHL draft lottery format.
Yeah.
And I had claimed, and maybe I was right, and maybe I was wrong, that I claimed that you had changed your tune regarding the draft lottery, and we can't remember that far back.
Yeah, it's
been a lot of radio, a lot of shows. We're not 100% sure. But you gave the draft lottery and its current format some thought over the course of the week. And what have you decided? What have you come up with about the best format for the NHL's draft lottery? Or what would you like to see at the very least?
I feel like there's an embarrassing product being put on the ice by many of these Canadian teams in an effort to try and get this pick.
Sure.
And shutting guys down and that. People do pay to see these teams, NHL teams, play, and they pay big money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that there needs to be a change in terms of what teams are doing now is that selling, maybe not explicitly.
Sure.
But they're selling the ability to get a high pick as a kind of like a marketing tool for poor performance. I don't like. I want to just simplify it.
Okay. Simple is good. I'm a pretty simple guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
The teams that don't make the playoffs.
Sure.
All get the same percentage chance to win the lottery.
Just throw them all into a
7.2, but just above 7%.
So that would be the, you know, the 14 teams times, you know, 7%, or, you know, just under 8%, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so that there's no incentive whatsoever.
No incentive whatsoever.
For finishing dead last.
You have to compete. There's no incentive for finishing dead last.
Would that make more teams compete, or would that just make more teams? I mean, I guess they're going through the motions to some extent right now.
Well, they are. If they're all in the same position, you might as well play hard and get bent and put your guys through and try and get in, push it to the playoffs as long as possible.
Sure.
You have no incentive to be bad. It doesn't reward. The biggest problem I have is rewarding failure.
Right.
That's enough of the rewarding failure.
I mean, but rewarding failure has been a fundamental aspect of pro sports for the last 50 years.
I'm sick of it. You know, I thought about last week, you know, is it Oilers getting so many picks in a row, and then, oh, maybe they're that bad. And you know what? Fair enough. Maybe they're that bad that they deserve those picks. Enough rewarding failure. You might hit the lottery. Great, fine. It should be a lottery. It should be equal chance. Everybody buys a ticket, gets an equal shot.
So would you? That's
simple.
Fine.
It's a simple solution.
It is a simple solution, but are you against something like, you know, there's been talk about doing, you know, a single elimination tournament?
I'm against it.
Why are you against that but for a lottery?
If you don't make it, you know, there's no, you just get a percentage chance. That's it. You know, the tournament, what are you doing? Who's playing in the tournament? Who's injured? Who's not injured?
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're the Jets, for example, and if that tournament existed, are you shutting down Tyler Myers and Toby Enstrom?
Sure, maybe. Okay, Drew, maybe that's it. What are the parameters of that tournament?
I'm not saying that
when is it happening?
Well, it's happening probably simultaneous to the playoffs, which is
the NIT tournament? Come on. Yeah. I mean, come on. You're not doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you're just saying everybody gets 8%, 7.5%.
That's right. Everybody gets that percent. It'll be what it'll be.
I can live with that. I don't have a problem with that on its face. I mean, it is.
Then you can actually see the roster, you know, and if the team's out of it, like Columbus, but, you know, after a month, you just got to play as hard as possible. There's no incentive to finish that, to finish last.
Sure. Well, I mean, Columbus isn't even, you know, has played hard for the remainder of the year.
Right. Maybe it results in less sell-offs at the deadline. Maybe there's less trades. I don't know. Maybe there's more. I don't know. But I think. If you're gonna, it puts more pressure. I know it's the owner's gonna hate it. Puts more pressure on your general manager to actually do something, and not just rely on tanking every year. Let's see what you can do.
I can live with it. I mean, I don't disagree with it. It seems like it is counterintuitive that you reward somebody for being so bad when it's not very difficult to be bad.
And the reason I'm putting this out there, Drew, if you have no cap.
Yeah,
I can see it more, the system that you have, or even no lottery. The cap evens everything out.
Sure.
You can't even have that many good players on your team and pay them all.
Well, the
right? So you're going to have to be worked into the system, the players and them getting paid. So if you have that, is giving the GMs some help, why do you need more?
It's a fair point. I mean, I don't understand. It is a fundamental sort of North American sports idea that you reward the teams that have been bad in the year previous.
Now they're not going to do this.
No, that's the irony of the whole thing.
I mean, the better chance of that playoff proposal 2 segments ago than this one. But that's just what I think is what
the playoff proposal, because it probably would goose some teams. You know, makes the teams look better.
That's right. Well, it gets more. And they make more money.
Yeah, they make more. I mean, it's all about money.
Money.
Obviously, that's the only thing that ever matters with any of these rule
but
changes and everything else.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think fans, this system would at least have these teams putting their best rosters forward at the end, because there'd be no incentive not to. So at least the games that the fans are paying for, their hard-earned money paying for, over the past month or two or three, of any teams that are out of it, they'll actually get to see, you'd hope, the best product possible.
Sure.
From both teams.
Yeah, well,
the Vancouver roster is an embarrassment.
And it's not like the Jets roster was you know, chock full of bona fide NHLers.
That's true also.
But you're right. The fact that game, I mean, that was it's insulting enough that you're paying for exhibition hockey at full price in September.
Everybody does that. But yeah. I mean, exhibition, I can understand working in young players to see what they can do. And I appreciate, Drew, that the price isn't all that. I agree. You know, that's the whole league. Every league does it.
Yeah.
those type of games, and it's not the only one here. I mean, you watch Edmonton or,
sure,
you know, Calgary or Montreal, whatever. Like these games. I realize there's some injuries here, don't get me wrong.
But they're unwatchable.
Right.
They are relatively unwatchable.
And a lot of these injuries, because these teams want to be bad in Toronto, they want to shut it down early.
Yeah. Well, interesting idea there, Richie. Big thank you to our guests today, Mike Harrington and Dave Isaac, for joining us. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and the 44th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Alex for waking up bright and early for us. For colleague Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next on TSN 1290.